Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
They're having an ongoing affair. Usually they meet on a very regular basis. They have a routine. Humans are creatures of habit, so they follow a certain procedure. And then I usually watch the GPS for about 30 days, and 90% of the time you get your answer that way, or at least you know where to look in more detail.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free. Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is watch your back, the role of a private investigator in divorce with veteran PI Victor Ortino. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So today we do have an incredible guest for you. We're very lucky to have veteran private investigator Victor Ortino with us. I think this is going to be a really interesting episode for a lot of our listeners because the role of a private investigator in divorce is something that always comes up with clients. And Victor really has such a wealth of knowledge and experience in this area. Let me just give you a little of his background so you realize how lucky we are to have him. Victor is the owner and founder of Ortino Investigations, and he's been a licensed private investigator since 1984. He founded Ortino Investigations in 89. They're based in Florida, and he has 17 highly trained licensed private investigators who are experienced in all phases of investigations, and importantly, in courtroom testimony, because as you know, we're talking about divorce, it often comes to that. Many of his investigators have been employed by Ortino Investigations for years, and many of them are instructors for the now required course for private investigator licensing in the state of Florida, and he actually wrote several of the courses for that state certification program. So I think you all can see we have someone who pretty much has all of the knowledge and background information that we need to give you some, you know, deeply valuable insights into this sort of back of the courthouse or back of the process world today. So thank you so much for joining us, Victor. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for me as well. Full disclosure, I've known you for more than 20 years, I think.
Long time.
Yeah. And have used you on many, many of my cases. And you also have a process serving division. And I've pretty much only used your process serving company for the last 20 something years, unless there was some sort of a conflict or somebody knew you and said, no, I don't want him to know I'm getting a divorce, which has happened a few times. And you've done thousands of divorce case investigations, not just for me, but for many other attorneys as well, and for parties. And you've testified in probably thousands of cases too, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So let's start with this basic question because people come all the time. Should I hire a PI? Should I not? I don't think people know exactly what PIs do and how they can help a divorce case. So why don't you just start with that basic overview?
Well, every state is a little different in their requirements. Florida is a no-fault state, so it means you really don't have to prove infidelity. So when we get involved in cases in Florida, we usually get involved where they're trying to prove that the marital money is being spent on another person, and child custody cases, that type of thing, where one parent wants custody over the children over the other. And that's what we mostly do in Florida. We do some cases with people wanting to prove that their spouse is having an affair. So we do get involved in that, but usually it's just for their own state of mind.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And so many of my clients, that's the question that they come through my door asking, you know, can I get a private investigator? I think my husband's cheating. I think my wife is having an affair. And, you know, even when we explain to them that in a no-fault state, the, you know, the issue of whether someone is having an affair may or may not have an impact on the actual breakdown of assets or things, they really do want to know. They just want to know because it's driving them crazy. So how do you even start that type of an investigation? What sort of information would you need and what would you do?
Well, usually what I get from them first is routine, what they do suspect. Usually especially with women, their hunches are usually correct. So if they assume something, I try to follow that lead. The first thing I want to do is I want to know what their spouse does for a living and what opportunity he would have to have an affair. And
Or she.
Yes. So, you know, depends on the spouse. And some people have more opportunity than others. Some people are in their own business. Some people are salespeople and they do a lot of traveling. So it really depends on the opportunity. And that's what guides me to doing what where I want to go. If they haven't filed in Florida, they just changed the law a couple years back. But if they haven't filed for divorce, then usually what I recommend is let's put a GPS on the person's car. And we track the vehicle. And we can do that legally as long as they're one party has not filed for divorce in Florida. That usually tells me where the person goes. If they're having an affair, and that's when most people get caught. If they just have a fling, they usually don't get caught. But if they're having an ongoing affair, usually they meet on a very regular basis. They have a routine. Humans are creatures of habit, so they follow a certain procedure. And then I usually watch the GPS for about 30 days, and 90% of the time you get your answer that way, or at least you know where to look in more detail.
I think that's interesting. How do you actually get, is it something that you have to climb underneath the car and actually like put something on it, or how does that work?
Well, it really depends on the person. There's several different kinds. If you can get away with it, they have one that plugs into your diagnostic board. That's the cheapest way to go. And it's just a little square thing, probably fits in the palm of your hand. It's all black and you just plug it in the diagnostic port. You never have to worry about batteries. You never have to worry about anything. The other problem is with the GPS, if you don't use that, now that is obvious, you can see that if you're familiar with cars. So if you have a person that's car savvy, they're going to notice something there. If you are savvy with cars, then usually what I do is we have a magnetic mount that the battery will last about 6 months, and then we put that on the car and we hide that on the car.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting what you said about the GPS, because I actually had a client who figured out that her husband was having an affair because she looked in his GPS, the addresses, previous destinations, yes. And he kept going to the same place over, you know, she figured it out that way. So it was almost like what you're talking about following, but she actually just went into the GPS and found it that way.
That's the cheapest way to do it, because when you get into surveillance, usually sometimes you need two people, and that gets expensive.
And I just want to clarify a little bit about the Florida law and any law, really. Susan and I actually did a whole episode on this, and that is just for people's information. Just because it's a no-fault state doesn't mean that fault never matters. It only means that fault doesn't have to be proven in order to get a divorce. But, you know, cheating, things like that can be considered, especially if it's super egregious or if lots and lots of money has been spent on the other person, then that can maybe be brought back into the marital estate and divided out, even though it's already been spent. You know, a forensic accountant can maybe figure out how much was spent on a particular person. So, you know, there are times that cheat and you know, sometimes cheating is used for a credibility thing. You know, if the person's been lying to their spouse, then, you know, in court, you can say to the judge, obviously, this person's a liar. They've been lying to their spouse for years, you know. So, so just because it's a no-fault state doesn't mean that fault never matters. But in general, judges aren't really all that interested in making someone wrong just because they cheated. And there has to be something else with that, like that they spent lots of money on the person or something like that. So I just wanted to make that clarification. So let's talk about custody. Okay. I know I've actually had you work on some custody cases for me. So what are the kinds of things that you would be looking for and the kinds of things that you would be doing in a custody case?
Well, actually, usually there's an issue involved when they have those problems, such as drinking or drugs. And we try to follow the person before, during, and visitation, and when they have custody of their children, because it's when it's most relevant. And we try to verify if they're drinking or, you know, if somebody has a drinking problem and they are drinking a couple hours before they pick up the children. Those are cases that we work on.
So you'll like follow the person and take pictures or video?
Correct. And we'll video, we'll document. And if they're intoxicated, we'll try to get them arrested.
And what other types of things do you look at? Do you look at their social media to see if there's like pictures of them drinking or something like that?
Not so much in child custody unless they're doing drugs. We do look at with regard to child custody, if they're smoking in the car with the children, if they're not using car seats. Other issues like that could have some relevancy to the case. When the biggest concern is there's a lot of parents that say, hey, my spouse is doing cocaine or they're doing this. And if they're doing that, that's very hard for us to find. We've walked in on people in the bathroom where they've had like lines of coke that they were doing when they were in there. And
amazing.
You know, getting that document, it's a rare issue, but it can be done. But once you know a person's habits, routines, then you know where to actually follow them and how to pursue it.
Yeah, and I would just, as far as the custody thing goes, I'd like to add that I've used you in a capacity at times where, my client suspects that the other side isn't staying with the kids when they're with the other person, that they're, you know, either leaving them and dumping them off at the grandparents' house or with a babysitter all the time or something like that, especially if there's a right of first refusal provision in the parenting plan.
Correct. And we do a lot of that as well. And it really depends on what the plan is. And sometimes you got to prove it, and then you as an attorney have to take it before the judge. Then the judge comes back with a ruling, and then we have to prove it again before they really slap them hard on their hand. And it depends on repeat offenders. We've had some cases where the lady, we've gotten arrested for DUI, then she's on probation, then we get her violating probation like 2-3 times before they actually took the child away. So we've had a couple cases like that.
So when you see that, like you just see the person is driving drunk with the kids or something, what do? You just call the police?
Well, in this particular case, no, that she wasn't with the kids, but we knew she had a drinking problem. So she'd start drinking every morning and before she goes to work and before this. And then we'd gather the information from work when she got fired from work. Well, we gathered that she was fired because they found alcohol and that she was drunk.
And how are you able to get that?
On that particular case, we were very lucky because one of the co-employees talked to us. You know, usually it's through subpoena. And then you find out, you know, how they're... But sometimes you can talk to somebody, you can plead to them. And, you know, when you're dealing with children and you say, listen, and they know that the person's a bad person, they don't want that person to have the children. So they give us the insight we need so that the attorney can go get the subpoena and pull the records.
And that type of information can be really impactful in a courtroom. You know, I had a case where my client was sure that his ex-wife was drinking and driving with the kids. And so we had an investigator following her. He followed her to the school. She was going to pick up the kids. And the school administrator called the police because she was obviously intoxicated. And the PI was able to get all of that, the arrest and everything on the children.
On tape.
It was all on tape. And, you know, obviously we were able to achieve a change of physical custody with as a result of that and a lot of other things. So that, that was a pure luck, I guess you would call it, that happened when the investigator was there. But that when you can get that type of video or photographic evidence or even the testimony of the PI, it can be incredibly impactful in that type of case. Yeah.
Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on Watch Your Back, the role of a private investigator in divorce with veteran PI Victor Ortino.
I've actually followed somebody to Belize because they thought they were taking money and opening up another account in another country. So we actually put an investigator in the plane with them. They went to Belize and they followed them. We got the name of the banks that they went to and that type of thing.
And now a word about our sponsor, Courtney Davies of Symmetry Financial Group. So as divorce attorneys, Rebecca and I know, divorce can wreak havoc on your finances regardless of your means and your wealth. Debt is a national crisis, and the banks are not here to help you. They're really one of the major culprits. Now there is a revolutionary new approach that will let you eliminate all of your debt in 9 years or less, including your mortgage, without spending any additional money.
Interested in learning more? We thought so. Certified debt-free life advisor Courtney Davies is offering you a free consultation on how this program works and can build out a customized plan just for you. Head over to CourtneyDavies.com, check out debt-free life, scroll down and submit the form. That's CourtneyDavies.com. It's time to take control of your financial well-being, folks. Begin your journey to financial freedom today and tell them that you heard about them on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including part two of The Kids Are All Right, or Are They? An Anatomy of a Child Custody Evaluation with Dr. Christina Hansen.
Unfortunately, with experience, I've learned the second they say simple, it is a difficult case.
Yes. Never believe the attorneys.
And now we return to today's show.
But let's talk. I want to talk a little bit about finances because Rebecca already mentioned that one of the areas where we might bring a private investigator in would be to talk about one of the parties spending a lot of money on an affair or a paramour. But there's other areas that we might bring a PI in on finances. Maybe we think someone's hiding income for purposes of evading child support. I've brought investigators in where someone is working under the table and we want to get, you know, getting cash under the table. We want to get evidence of that, or they're under reporting the amount that people are paying them. So can you give us a little more information on how you would do that sort of an investigation?
Well, with the latter one, with regard to they're not showing any income, we've done several cases, and usually, you know, they're working under the table, or they're working for a relative. And they'll go and they'll show up for work. They'll put 8 hours in. And so you document that, you know, you get them working. Sometimes we'll come back at the end of the day and see if they're still working. So you don't have to sit there all day. And we put that together that they're working a 40-hour work week so that when the attorneys take it into the judge, they can say, hey, this guy's showing up, he should be compensated for that. Whether his brother or father or whoever they're working for, doesn't pay him, that's not the spouse's responsibility. Other assets, yes, we've had cases where I've actually followed somebody to Belize because they thought they were taking money and opening up another account in another country. So we actually put an investigator in the plane with them. They went to Belize and they followed them. We got the name of the banks that they went to and that type of thing. Offshore money is very hard to find. I do have some people that can get banking information in the United States. When you go offshore and other areas, then it becomes difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be our next question about hiding assets, because everybody always thinks people are hiding assets or hiding money. Now, sometimes, you know, people have to be kind of realistic about that. I had a guy one time who said, oh, she's hiding $500,000. And I said, well, why do you think she's hiding $500,000? Well, because she made $50,000 a year from 1985 to 1995. And that's 10 years of $50,000. So she must have $500,000 hidden. I'm like, you don't think she spent that? I mean, it's like not very much money a year. Oh, no, he was convinced.
Every penny of it is sitting somewhere.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, so, and a lot of people get mad, like, oh, you know, how come you didn't know about this or you didn't know about that? And I always say, there's not some hidden place in the sky, some, like, bank of information that you can just pop in and that only attorneys and private investigators know about and can just go and download. You know, there has to be some breadcrumb somewhere along the way, right?
And a lot of that, sometimes we steal trash. And when you go through somebody's trash, you can find banks that, you know, they may throw the envelope away, they hide the account number, but they'll have a statement from a bank, you know, and it's in a different area. So when we steal the trash and you go through that, sometimes you can find that stuff.
And I just want to add that there's no reasonable expectation of privacy with regard to garbage that's put out on the curb.
Correct.
So there's the constitutional argument around digging through trash.
That's so, right. Now,
it's a lot different for civil and criminal. So civilly, yeah, you have enough information to get it. If it was a criminal case, they usually pay the trash guy to actually take possession, and then they meet him down the street just a little bit away and they grab it. So, and that's how they do it criminally rather than civil.
Yeah. And as far as assets, you know, bank accounts in the country versus out of the country, even in the country, I have found, you know, people will find out, okay, they have money in SunTrust or something, and you go and you dig more and you find out that, oh, well, they have $18 in there or something. You know, it doesn't mean that they have $1 million sitting somewhere, right?
Right. Well, the company I'm using now comes back with an amount in the bank account, which was very
nice.
Shocking.
Yeah, it's not always correct, though. That's what I have found. Yeah. But harder is the offshore money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you're starting to spend some big dollars, right?
And I totally agree. And a lot of that stuff, they go to these other countries where they don't have immunities, you know, that transfer the money. They have to do bribe. They have to bribe bankers over there.
Oh, really?
So how they get it, you know, it's above my pay grade and I don't want to be involved in it, you know. But
hilarious.
I've had people come up with stuff that you wouldn't believe for the dollar.
Yeah, and I just tell people to just make sure that it's going to be a good return on their investment. You know, are we looking for $5 million? Because, you know, it's worth spending 50 if you're going to get $5 million back, right? But if it's going to be less than that, then it may not be a good return on your investment. Sometimes people just think, oh, it's the principle of the thing, like, you know, but sometimes it's worth it and sometimes it's not.
Yeah, well, it's the principle of the thing can be the most expensive words in divorce, right? So, but it's a very good point. And this is the conversation I have with clients every single time we talk about bringing a PI into the case, is a lot of the things that you're talking about, Victor, are very time intensive, which means that the fees add up, right? I mean, it just, correct, it takes a lot of time to follow someone or fly down to Belize to, you know, go track where they're going to a bank account, or to bribe officials in foreign countries. You know, that, correct, it can, even just a standard case, the one that I had where the gentleman was going off to work, but under reporting the amount that he was getting paid in cash by the various clients, that involved following him for 30 days, talking to all the clients after he left and getting an idea from those who would talk about it as to how much money they were paying him. And, you know, it cost quite a bit of money to my client, quite a bit of money to establish a reasonable income stream from what he was doing. Now, that turned out to be worth it, but it's hard to know sometimes when you're talking to the clients until you get out there and you start doing your investigation, right?
That's totally true. And like a typical, if you're trying to prove infidelity, usually could be $3,000 to $5,000, you know. You get into child custodies, I've had them up to 10 and 20,000, you know. So and it's something you really have to prove, and then sometimes you have to reprove 6 months later,
right?
Know? Yeah, because then what happens is it takes 6 months to get to trial, and then the, yep, information becomes stale, so you have to update it, right?
Correct.
Prove it's still going on. Yep. So, yep.
Well,
and some of these. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say with custody, it's always more expensive. It doesn't matter what you're talking about, whether it's the legal fees, the, you know, if you need a custody evaluator, like we just had Dr. Hansen on the show, you know, custody is always more expensive because you have to prove facts. It's not just money.
Right.
Correct. And a lot of the stuff I do, like we were saying with the psychologist and all that, is I gather them the information that they can present to the psychologist so that they have something else to go on to question. So everything we do, we make court ready. Not all PIs do that. You got to be careful because some of them, you know, if you have a case that lasts, you know, 2-3 years, their notes are crap. And you got to be able to go back in and testify exactly what you did, you know, several years later. And so you got to be careful with that. You know, another big thing we do a lot too is alimony cases. That's another big issue that we do.
Well, yeah, and supportive relationships, right? So, yes, you know, after the divorce is over and now the person who's receiving alimony is living with someone else.
Yes.
And now you have to prove that, you know, that that's happening.
We had a case out of Maryland one time where you had to actually prove, and don't quote me on the days, but it was over 300 days out of the year that they were cohabitating. So we'd end up going every morning and every night checking for this car being parked at their house. And then once a week, prove that he was still using that car.
Yeah. Those can be complicated cases. I've had several in Connecticut where we have a cohabitation statute as a part of the alimony provisions that requires not only a cohabitation with a non-family member adult, but also that it have a financial impact on the recipient of alimony's financial situation. So that can take quite some time too, right? You just said 300 days. I mean, there has to be, sometimes people will maintain a separate address, but really be living to circumvent these laws, but true, will really be spending most of their time with the person, you know, that they're living with. So yeah, PIs get involved often in those types of cases.
Well, the first thing we normally do is we see where the paper trail shows them residing. A home run is when their driver's license, their vehicles, and all this information is showing the same address as the person that they're supporting, or and they're all together.
Yeah, usually they're not. They don't do that.
Yeah,
no.
Because usually we can find that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I have found is they hold another place, then they rent that other place out to a third party. So they are staying at that other place and they're generating income from that other place. But if they're not doing that and they're keeping their own place and they're just shacking up 3 to 7 days a week, you know, they still have their own place. And so it's, you can't prove it.
Right.
So. Yeah. Our time has gone really fast. But I just want to ask you quickly, you mentioned car trackers. Talk about spyware on a computer or cloning of a hard drive or video cameras inside the house, you know, nowadays with Nest and all of that sort of thing. Let's talk about some of the other ways that you gather information nowadays.
Well, and talk about their legality as well, because I think people have questions about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the cameras. If you have ownership rights to the area, you can put cameras in your house as long as you're not doing the audio portion of the camera. And you can do audio as long as you have it written somewhere. You're under audio and video surveillance. Then you can do audio. However, you cannot. I had a client. We literally snuck into his apartment down here, or condo. Hit a camera up in one of the smoke detectors, and then put all the recording stuff in the attic, and ran it through Wi-Fi so we could record it. He's never been in the apartment, but his wife would come down from up north, and she would be there, and that's the only way we would have eyes on inside the house. As long as there's no right to privacy, when you know, for him. Meaning I wouldn't do it in the bedroom. I wouldn't do it in the bathroom. I would do a general area. So we covered the hallways, you know, that type of thing, you know, just a general living area where you wouldn't go to the bathroom and have an expectation of privacy. It's a borderline issue and you can fight that, to the other way, but we've never gotten in trouble because we never get caught. And then we go in and remove the items. But when people get in trouble is they start putting audio where they can't record audio. And that's how they get into trouble a lot of times. With the cloning of devices, I don't get into that. If you have ownership rights to your computer and you put it on your computer, I don't personally see a problem, but I'd want to defer to a criminal attorney to make sure. But if you don't have ownership rights to that and you put it on, then you may have an issue. What was the other one you were asking?
Spyware on a computer, cloning of a hard drive.
Cloning. Yeah.
Yeah. The spyware stuff and the cloning is, I don't suggest that, but sometimes that's the only way you find, you know, I've had clients, they've taken their computer and usually I'll just tell them to take it down, have a computer person check it. But a couple of times they've done that and they found pornography, child pornography on the computer from the husband. And the husband gets arrested, you know, which probably deserving, but, you know, they would have never had it if the wife didn't turn that in. But
right. I think it's interesting to point out that not every element of information that a private investigator uncovers is going to be admissible in court, but it can be incredibly informative for the client and for the attorney in finding other ways to get admissible evidence as well. So it's not that every single solitary thing that you uncover, just because you uncovered it, is going to automatically be admissible in a courtroom, but often it gives us a roadmap for further discovery.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, you give it to like a custody evaluator or something like that. Which, you know, his or her report and can be admissible.
One of the things that I think is important is, as long as we're not taking sworn statements, the information we find is usually not discoverable. It falls under attorney-client, attorney-investigator work product.
Yeah, if the attorney is the one that engaged you.
Correct.
Right.
So that's a really, really important distinction. So usually if it's, you know, if it comes to me, if it's a situation that has come to me through one of my clients, then I'm the one that reaches out to you and says, hey, Victor, I need you to work on this. And then you send me your engagement agreement. But if it's a private person, they haven't filed for divorce yet.
Well, normally what I do in those situations, if I find it's going to be something of that nature, and it's going to go somewhere. I always know who their attorney is. And the first thing I always do when I talk to my clients is I say, if you're thinking about getting a divorce before you hire me, talk to your attorney.
Or get one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then usually then I'll go work, for, you know, even though if they come in and they give me the information, I'll call the attorney up, say, listen, I'm going to be sending you the stuff and I'll be invoicing through you so that there is that privilege. But as a private investigator, we cannot disclose any information without someone having to go before a judge and getting a special court order.
Right, a subpoena or something.
Yeah, they'd have to subpoena. They can't just subpoena us. They have to get a judge to issue a court order to release that information.
And
because we're covered by Florida statutes that we cannot release that information without written approval by our client.
Right.
But that's a good point. That's in Florida. It can be different in every state.
Correct.
And then just briefly, because we're kind of out of time at this point, I just want to mention, usually then you do a formal report. It includes, you know, everything that was done, pictures, video, whatever you've gathered. And then sometimes when people, the other side finds out that you've did work and the court order is granted and all if it's out in the open, then what happens? You end up getting deposed. You have to testify,
yes.
Right?
We'll be deposed and then we testify. Our one thing that I really pride ourselves in is we write detailed reports, and it's just black and white, clearly depicts what we find and all the supporting evidence. And for as many cases as I've had, we don't testify that much. We may testify 5% of our cases, if that much. Because when the other opposing attorney read our reports and they read everything that we did, it's indisputable. I mean, it's just black and white. This is what we have, because we only document what we actually see, not, you know, nothing hearsay.
Yeah, a good report is worth its weight in gold. So yeah. Having that high standard for your reports is truly important. So if we have run close to the end of our time, so what we do want to make sure that people know how to reach out to you, Victor, and to find out more about you and your company. So can you give us your contact information? We'll put it in the show notes, but for the people who are listening.
I would just, the easiest way is go to my website, www.ortinopi.com, and you do that, or you Google my name. I'm pretty well covered in Google, so I'll show up.
And what's the one biggest piece of advice you would give to people in divorce cases?
In divorce, good question. I'm not really sure.
Watch your back.
Watch your back.
Yeah. You never know who's watching. Yeah.
You never know who's watching.
Right. I wanted to call the episode Someone to Watch Over Me, but then I was like, oh, that's going to be too long.
Well, I do think it's true. I mean, look at the guy who flew down to Belize with a suitcase full of money or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He didn't know who was sitting next to him on that plane. So
no, and you
never know.
You would never suspect that.
No. No.
You know.
Well, thanks so much.
That's how it goes.
Thanks so much for being on the show, Victor.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure meeting you, Susan.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.